Welcome back to this bi-weekly meeting of the South Platte River Committee of Denver City Council. Join us for the discussion as the South Platte River Committee starts now.
Good afternoon, everyone. Here we go. Hi, welcome to the South Platte Corridor Committee. I'm Councilwoman Jamie Torres. I represent West Denver District 3. We have a packed and really exciting agenda, I think, today. So I want to get started with council member introductions. Do we have anybody on Zoom? Great. So I'll start to my left.
Good afternoon. Daryl Watson representing the fine District 9.
Laura Alvidres with Lucky District 7.
Chris Hines, Denver's Perfect 10.
Thank you so much.
Kevin Flynn, Southwest Denver District 2.
Thank you, sir. We've got a few action items. We'll go ahead and start with the Downtown Denver Area Plan, and I'll hand it over to our guests. And please introduce yourselves and go ahead and get started.
Thank you, Councilwoman Torres. David Gaspers with Denver Community Planning and Development. I'll walk you through some more of the technical slides, but first I'll hand it over to Courtney Garrett of the Downtown Denver Partnership to start us off.
Amazing. Well, as David said, Courtney Garrett, President and CEO of the Downtown Denver Partnership. Want to thank you all for this opportunity. And I want to start with a little bit of the potential of this plan and why we at the Downtown Denver Partnership care about it so deeply, why we've become both financial and project management partners with the city, and why this is a true North Star for our organization moving forward. So David, could you just go back to the opening slide? Wanted to start by just kind of thinking about when we look back at the 1987 Downtown Area Plan, and then what we saw again in 2007, it's absolutely undeniable that despite two recessions, so if you think about 87 to 2007, two recessions, so many market ups and downs, yet despite all of that, over the course of 40 years, those plans fueled more than four decades of unprecedented growth. And our city changed, and our city continues to change. So whether you're looking at that change through the lens of a global pandemic, or historic office vacancy rates, or you're more of the cup half full kind of a person, and you see that we have massive new development being proposed and new investment in our city, it leaves us at this moment when we can either choose to let these things evolve around us, or we can lead a vision for the future and write our own story. So that truly is the impetus for this plan and why we believe it's so important at this moment in time. So we all often point to Denver Union Station as a vision turned reality. That's one of our best examples that's looked at internationally. And it's because of the thoughtful planning, the multi-agency partnerships, private sector moving in the same direction, this complete neighborhood that truly is a mecca for transit, amenities, housing, entertainment, open space, that has been delivered in our city because of the vision and the collaboration on the front end. So now we sit, next slide, David, we sit at this moment when we can do the same. The real urgency around this plan and what this plan presents is a plan that calls for immediate and urgent and important action items today, as well as setting a long-term vision for the future. So to reiterate why now, you all have heard all of us talk about these statistics over and over and over again. Downtown continues to be an economic engine for this entire city. But if you'll go to the next slide, David, we'll see, and we all know, that this is incredibly fragile. When we look at office vacancy rates, we see the lack of green space. We see the lack of diversity of housing stock to really care for our community. We also know that just at a baseline, we are missing people back in downtown. So that's where the plan started, is with that, the people. So even though we were on a very short time frame, because we knew, again, those near-term urgent and important action items are imperative, so even with a short time frame, the community engagement, the high engagement, has been very robust. Over the course of time, we received some positive feedback, but by and large, we heard concern. We heard concern about affordability, about vacancy, about safety, and this overarching feeling of downtown just doesn't feel like it's ours anymore, heard in multiple communities. So when we talk about solutions, the converse sort of that theme was, well, what will bring Denver together? And over again, we heard this theme of play. Play unites us. Places where all backgrounds, all communities, all neighborhoods in Denver feel that they have a place and that they have a piece that they own that's a part of this city. Carol Coletta, who some of you may know, is an amazing thought leader in urban planning space. She calls downtowns the civic commons, the historic places in our cities where government, where neighborhoods, where jobs, and where memories all come together. And it's all within this notion of diverse play. So when we look, and you know, it's very coincidental, your agenda in front of you today talks about this quite a bit. Where have we been successful? Why do people come downtown? Where we have kids, where we have families, we have our sports. Really providing play. This isn't about playgrounds on every corner, though that would be great. It's about play for all ages. Because with play, we know, comes economic opportunity, cultural celebration, and that social connection. And you see that succeed all over our city, from Union Station to Ball Arena and everywhere in between. So from a data perspective, Cushman and Wakefield, again, fortuitously recently put out a study about the value of play. For decades, we as cities and as urban centers have talked about a live-work-play environment. And we've doubled down on investment and efforts in the live and the work, but we haven't been as intentional around play. So what that looks for in the plan is to really apply that principle in a number of categories. So what you will see in this plan and what you have seen in this plan is, of course, very keen attention to mobility, connectivity, housing, grocery stores, social services, affordability, sustainability, green space, all of those elements that truly make great cities, with a through line of making downtown Denver the place where our region comes to play. So I'll pass it back to David, and you'll get into more of the specific strategies and tactics. But again, just want to thank you all so much on behalf of the Downtown Denver Partnership and look forward to partnering on the implementation moving forward.
Thanks, Courtney. That was a great start, and I'll walk through the slides here that talk more about plan content, the criteria for evaluation of the plan to be consistent with the comprehensive plan and provide that recommendation to forward to full city council. Before I do that, I want to acknowledge that it's not just been a partnership between CPD and the Downtown Denver Partnership, even though we've been joint project managers, but all city departments have played a role in this because every city department touches downtown in some way, form or fashion, right? So we have great support in the crowd today from not only DDP staff, thanks guys, but also Arts and Venues, CASR, Dottie, DPR, this has been an all-in effort from city staff, especially to move with the speed that we actually have accomplished this plan. We really launched this in the public around Labor Day of 2024, and through very much intentionality to make sure that we are not spending 2 or 3 years trying to plan, because we knew we had immediate actions, got to a draft plan this summer. And here we are today, wrapping this up hopefully by November if we get to City Council as planned. So it's been a really fun experience in the sense of that it's been such a collective effort across all these different departments to make this happen, not only to deliver the plan, but then be committed to implementation. We've had a lot of great public input here. I just have a note here on the comment resolution and plan content that we delivered in the August draft. Ultimately, we had over 1,500 comments come in between the public, the CAC, the advisory committee that steered this whole thing, our internal review, as well as planning board's review. And so major themes there heard, their safety, affordability. I think Courtney already mentioned those, job creation, economic investment, mobility and access, better streets and public spaces, arts and culture, green and sustainable. All things that I'll touch on as I go through some of the slides that highlight plan content. I'll start with this plan snapshot, which we've called a planner on a page before. I kind of think of this as like a visual elevator speech, if you will. And we really want to emphasize this near-term and long-term focus that the plan has immediate actions, things that we are already doing today and will be doing in 2026 around safety, affordability, streamlining governance, supporting local business and office, improving connections and access. That are grounded in our foundational elements of the plan, these building blocks of investment, resilience, stories, innovation, equity, and connection, and most importantly, play. We really have that element kind of rising to the top and with a focus on play that will provide a spark, a momentum for downtown. So we start to deliver on some of these really big short-term projects like Civic Center Next 100, reimagining Glen Arm Plaza, already have momentum on that. Investments into Skyline Park and adjacent projects around Skyline that will help us in support of this long-term vision of a complete and vibrant downtown. So that's like reimagining Broadway, something that we've been talking about but want to deliver this time. Realigning and rethinking of Spirit Boulevard and Cherry Creek, and other significant transformational projects. So I'll walk through the plan here a little bit. First chapter about the plan has a lot of the data that Courtney already went over, but we're grounded in a lot of elements of the impact that downtown has for not only the city of Denver, but the entire region. We also want to really relate the plan to our stories. We heard a lot from the community about how they have such great memories of visiting downtown throughout their entire lives and bringing their children downtown and all those things. So I encourage you, if you ever look at the appendix, the first appendix A is a really great a summary of different stories that we've collected that Historic Denver helped us actually put together and is a really great read of different vignettes. We capture that here on this page. The building blocks, again, are the vision elements to create a vibrant, healthy, and complete downtown. So I've already run through those, but it is really the structural core of the plan content. Chapter three, challenges and opportunities. Again, what Courtney was saying, we very much acknowledge some of the real and acute challenges that downtown is facing today. But we want to look at that as an opportunity to actually think forward and how barriers to connection you can actually bring connection to all of our neighborhoods into downtown. That the existing inconsistent investment across downtown actually is an opportunity to activate the market. And the lack of places to explore and linger is an opportunity to actually elevate play across all of downtown. So I want to highlight this graphic done by one of our CBD staff members, Jen Kim, who really highlights on the left here what maybe we experience today in downtown, which has its good, but also maybe not its ideal, and what it could be as we start to implement this plan vision and really activate downtown places to invite everyone to come back to downtown. Chapters 4 and 5 are where most of the plan recommendations lie. Chapter 4 is policies and programs. We have 7 bundles of policies here that run across all of that. This is a good example of navigation and legibility here that has an outcome-based goal and also outcome-based policies. That's the A, B, C, and D here, really focused on what are we trying to achieve. And then the more detailed strategies take a deeper dive. We also will have a full implementation plan, associated with this. The implementation matrix was included in the materials given to you. And that even takes a deeper dive on actually how we're going to achieve some of these strategies. So we put a lot of effort into to implementation here. And then focus areas. We have plan recommendations that run all across downtown, but we had 7 particular geographies that we wanted to focus on and have spreads like what you see on the screen here for Civic Center that gives an illustrative graphic of how all these things come together. We've thought a lot about how these projects are not independent of one another, but bundled together to have the greatest impact and have the most value for public investment. And then each one of those big ideas has a narrative here. And again, with the implementation planning, we hope to have even greater detail on how we're going to deliver on these projects. So we have 7 focus areas. The implementation chapter is probably the most robust implementation chapter we've produced so far. It really is a roadmap for action. We have this schedule that shows the immediate, short-term, and long-term actions, starting with some essential additional kind of next step studies, but quickly getting into actual on-the-ground changes to downtown, while also acknowledging that some of these big ideas in the plan are going to take years, a decade or more to deliver. So again, we want to have both immediate, short, and long-term. And I want to acknowledge that from an implementation standpoint, we have a lot more detail in the plan on how each one of these timeframes work, but we already have departments like Dottie are working on how to actually move forward with this transportation two-way study and actually what that means to them in the next 6 to 12 months to actually have that funded and thinking through what other funding sources they need to have to actually potentially deliver on two-way conversion. So we're already thinking about implementation and executing implementation of the plan. And again, that appendix, worth a read, those Denver stories is really valuable and interesting. We do have a map book to make sure that all the maps are clear and concise, and also reference maps. Those are all going to be appendices that are adopted in the plan, the implementation matrix, implementation plan, and other reports and studies that our consultant Sasaki provided for us will also be included but not adopted. To quickly just cover the criteria for evaluation when evaluating plans, council and planning board look to comprehensive plan 2040 and consider the following criteria: that it's inclusive community process, that the plan is consistent with the vision, goals, and strategies of the comprehensive plan, and demonstrates a long-term view. So as we mentioned before, very inclusive process, very intense over the last 12 months. To deliver all the input that we had. Very intentional reaching out to equity groups with different focus groups and other means. Also had representation on the CAC, not only from our fine council members, Watson and Hines, but also folks from labor unions, for example. So very intentional with that. We have reviewed both the comprehensive plan and blueprint in Denver as a key supplement and found broad support and consistency with both of those documents. And finally, the long-term view. The downtown area plan is a long-term collective aspiration of the community. It envisions a vibrant, healthy, and complete downtown, and will serve as a compass for guiding future growth and investment from all different resources, including the Downtown Development Authority. So with that, I will open it up for questions and then hopefully move to a recommendation.
Thank you so much, David and Courtney. Let's start with Councilwoman Alvidrez.
Thank you, Committee Chair. I appreciate the presentation and all the work that went into getting us to this place, so thank you for that. This is the plan that DDP helped pay for, right? Okay, so thank you for investing in this plan. I think it has some really exciting things. I love how it talks about people-centered rather than car-centered, as downtown should be. One of my concerns is around implementation. I know I appreciate that there's an action plan. I don't know if other plans have included that, but I don't think I've seen that. But one of the things that I saw in the public comments was about public versus private investment. And can you talk a little bit about how that conversation went and where you kind of landed with the plan?
Yeah, I'll start and happy to hand it over to Courtney. It was a kind of a driving thought as we started this process. knowing that there was, unlike other plans that we sometimes do, it has a potential funding source for some of the projects with the Downtown Development Authority. And so we really look to try to maximize potential public investment to, you know, really leverage that to get the private investment back into downtown. So very intentional to think through how we can be thinking of investments in the public realm, or investments for adaptive reuse or other things that are combined together, ultimately have a collective value more so than their individual investments. And so the idea of, you know, good planning being a public action, in this case, investing in our downtown, but then bringing about a long-term and long-lasting, widespread private investment. So we're actually getting more for our city dollars by bringing the private investment along, was an important part of the whole planning process and how we came to the recommendations that we had.
And from the private sector perspective, that's one of the reasons why we feel this plan is so incredibly critical right now. Because when we have development interests coming to the table, or when we're recruiting development interests, frankly, to have a clear vision is step number one. So if I'm sitting across the table from a potential investor, I can't tell you how many times the question is raised, what is your vision for both downtown and this property? And we're able to guide it to a vision that we've all said, this is right for our downtown. So when you look at that implementation matrix, to speak a little bit more broadly to your question, we feel as an organization that one of our best partnerships that we can offer and serve the city is the stewards of that plan. So we dissect each and every one and say, if this is a private sector or action item, then how are we helping to generate that investment? And it becomes somewhat incremental because we don't have, I mean, we have the development authority, but that's not going to solve for all. So we have to collectively work with private sector investment, what the public sector can provide, and everything in between to address each and every line item one by one.
I really appreciate that. That makes a lot of sense. And then one of my other questions is, I have been talking to like lodging and tourism professionals, and one of the things that they also bring up is safety. And so I don't see too much about safety, but I am curious. One of the things in the public comment was also around what services are being provided to individuals. I think we all know that individuals go downtown when they need help. And so if you could speak to where maybe that is in the plan if I didn't see it, or what the thought is there.
Yeah. You want to speak specifically?
Yeah, just
the plan is, and I can speak.
Absolutely. In Chapter 4, we have the third bundle of safety programming and activation. And so we have quite a bit there.
Can you give me the page number?
Oh, I don't have the page
number. Okay, no worries. I'll look it up later.
Yeah. If someone else has it, let me know. But yeah, safety programming and activation. So we have specific recommendations there that are capturing both things that we are already doing, as well as want to continue to augment and improve. And, you know, there's a lot of examples of that partnership occurring already.
Yeah, absolutely. And one, when you see safety reflected in a long-term plan, it is something that also changes so rapidly that I think what you'll see in Chapter 4 reflects our principles and what we believe is right to be done morning, noon, and night from now for the next 20 years for our community. And then on a more ongoing basis, we have to address both public safety and public health in real time. So it's hard to codify in a plan, quite frankly, that's adopted for the next 20 years. But definitely when it comes to land use, when it comes to ensuring there's a proximity of services, I believe you'll see in there that that's been addressed. And then we'll continue as the Downtown Denver Partnership to provide our layers of outreach and downtown security in perpetuity.
Is there any place where people can go downtown if they need help?
There are a number of places. Frankly, I think that's one of our greatest challenges, and I think is somewhat addressed in the plan. Mm-hmm. From our perspective, we have two outreach case managers who are on our team, and they work alongside our security. So we have that available. They've become well-known downtown, Y and Jesse, for people who are in need. So they help as a facilitator and a warm handoff to the number of services that are out there. And I would say the support that we've had from Host with Outreach, we also partner with St. Francis on Outreach. So a lot of that are the people who are out doing the work day by day, getting to know the individuals who are in need, and then helping to make placements with the proper services.
I appreciate that. I think with the aid center gone and not having a place to go, that can be confusing. So, but my last question is around children. I may have missed it, but definitely concerned about daycare centers and schools. I know that right now it talks about how there's not a lot of children downtown, but I love the idea of children being downtown. I was recently at the Biennials pop-up in Writers Square, and I know that's near that B play area for children, which I, as a mom, really appreciate. But curious how we're going to continue to integrate young people. Something that I've been talking about and that has come up in my district is just people complaining about kids being out, even at a park or hanging out, and getting calls and emails about those things. So I think it's because people aren't having as many kids, and a lot of people don't have children. So when they see them, I don't know. I don't understand it. I'm
really annoyed by them.
Yeah.
Who are these little people?
Yes. What are these creatures?
I have two teenagers.
I'd like to hear just a little bit about how we are going to be welcoming children into downtown and how we're going to meet those needs of education and daycare.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would just start. Sorry, I feel passionate about this.
Yeah,
well, no. We have kids, similar in age, that have been downtown together, actually.
That's true. During
a massive storm. Yeah, it was not the best. But anyway, I digress. I think that's where the element of play as the headline of this plan is so magical. Because while it definitely is play at all ages, it places an emphasis on a family-friendly downtown, which is what we heard, whether it's childcare, whether it's having more playgrounds. I mean, that in terms of the threads in the community engagement that we heard was a family-friendly downtown. And it has to be more complex than, again, just playscapes, and we need to have family-friendly housing and all of the support systems. But that is in my mind and in our minds why that resonates so significantly, because that's how families and that's how kids are drawn. And if we make it safe enough and we create those experiences, I think I've told this story at council before. Now my 13-year-old son bikes from our house in the Highlands over I-25, parks it at Skyline Park, and takes his buddies to the movie theater at the Pavilions. And we need more kids to feel like that. So
that's great. I will say, when it comes to the public side of investment, I would like to see public investment in a school or daycare. And I don't see any real commitment or like ideas that are moving towards that. Is there any?
Yeah, we do have recommendations about having more of those neighborhood amenities. And I think within the strategies, we can continue to figure out exactly how the city investment can be front and center on that, you know, including with the DDA.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Committee Chair.
Thank you. And I didn't mean to say I'm annoyed by children. just to clear that up, I really do feel like kids make neighborhoods what they are. There's a responsiveness in the built infrastructure to kids and families and the kinds of things that they need, and parks being one of them, schools being another, care centers being another. So for downtown, sorry, I'm jumping ahead of some of the folks in queue. For downtown to feel like a neighborhood and not a destination, I think that becomes a really critical piece. Councilman Flynn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm initially skeptical of the Spear Boulevard issue. Could you provide us, all of us, with any documentation on purpose and need, cost-benefit ratios? I look at the lay of the land, it looks like there's some very narrow passages between what's already built on our area versus on the main downtown side, particularly around the DPAC and a little farther south toward the convention center. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of money to do something that I'd like to know what is the marginal gain and benefit.
I'll start. And so, I mean, we acknowledge that's one of the long-term projects that will take not only a significant amount of capital to actually realize the vision, but a lot more planning, design, and thought put into it. So that's, I want to acknowledge that from the get-go.
I did read some of the material up front and understand what some of the goals are.
Sure.
And I'm just wondering, is it worth the cost for whatever the marginal gain is?
Yeah. Well, I think the key there is it a marginal gain or not, right? And I think we need to evaluate that more thoroughly. But the plan's not the first time this has come up, actually, right? I mean, the city has a study from HDR that looked thoroughly at this and weighed the pros and cons. And then others have looked, including tribe architects, at all the ways to potentially do this. And we need to be able to kind of at least have a conversation and move that forward and figure out from a potential opportunity for city-owned properties to provide affordable housing, to actually open up the river and actually improve the experience. So the water-based play idea that we actually want to get into our water bodies, like the Cherry Creek and Platte Rivers, and actually feel like we can interact with those, could be an amazing amenity for downtown that is just right there on our doorstep, but we're not utilizing fully today. And so I think there's a combination of a potential recreational amenity and open space opportunity that we could better realize. And as we would increase density in downtown, doubling our residential population through the plan horizon, we're going to want those open spaces. And at the same time, we can kind of break down that what is today feels like a barrier over to Auraria and the new development that will be happening at Ball and River Mile, and make it feel like it's more like the center of a new downtown Denver opposed to an edge, right?
And so it'd still be a barrier.
Well,
it would just
yeah.
be in a different place.
Well, I mean, but redesigning the roadway and making it feel like it's crossable, opposed in some instances today, it feels like it's about a quarter mile across, could change that perception. I'm not saying that the barrier will go away.
And of course, I remember when you had to go down to like Market and Wazee, and when you were going north and you had to go over the creek to mm-hmm. continue on
a
spear.
On a wagon and horse, but
not really.
No, yes.
Not really. I could go back to when the flood wiped out the original Rocky Mountain News office there in 1964. But I want to understand better, because we're talking about doing this will open up some of the area for development. Then we're talking about preservation of open space.
Yeah,
but when you develop, if you open it up and open an area for development, it's no longer an open space. So I want to get a better understanding of that.
Yeah, and I think that's what the study that we're proposing would start to really get down to the details of what are the bounds between them.
What I'm wondering is there a way to accomplish some of these goals, more accessibility to the stream, and more open space by the water without necessarily the multiple tens of millions of dollars
yeah,
this will cost?
Okay. I'll just add one more thing, and I'll hand it over to Courtney. I think Cherry Creek, as well as you know what we envision in the plan for Broadway, we're very pragmatic, I would say, in the sense that those are two very big ideas. But each individual aspect of those projects can be beneficial on their own. So a first thing that we want to look at with Cherry Creek is how do we actually improve the ecosystem of the creek, right? And actually make it feel like you can enter it, right? You know, and feel safe in it and all those type of things. That by itself would be a benefit, right? As we do that, we can look at other ways to potentially reimagine that space. Same thing with Broadway. I mean, we need to look through how to make Broadway and Lincoln function better, especially as they kind of come together there around 20th. And make that be an actual green boulevard. It's less of a barrier. Not saying that it'll be entirely be removed, but and that by itself, a two-way study might actually be worth considering. But that could open up other opportunities that are highlighted in the plan to create more park space in that area of downtown and to increase the multimodal access along Broadway. So I totally understand the apprehension on some of the big ideas, but it is a 20-year plan. We want to dream big, but have short-term actions that at least move it forward in a positive way.
Yeah. Understand that.
Yeah. I don't know that I could say it any better. I would just say one thing very directly is our interest in putting this in the plan has been to call the question. Because to your point, I think there have been multiple scenarios that have been dreamt of, put out there, and it's time that we decide as a community what is that ROI, because if you look at each concept, right. It's a little bit different.
Right.
So let's all come together under one study and one initiative to take a look at it and see what we really want to get out and what the feasibility is.
Sure.
I can say it directly.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll point out that Broadway used to end at 20th Street.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day before they pushed up to Brighton Boulevard.
Okay.
Does it start in District 7?
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Watson.
Oh, well, thank you, sir, for all the information. So thank you all so much. And your teams, as I'm looking around disperse folks. I mean, this has been an amazing experience. I mean, to have a downtown that has a clear plan for where we're going is essential. We can discuss the immediate shortfalls. We can discuss the ebb and flows of economic growth. But a city without a clear plan and direction as far as where our future is going is a city that's dying. And so I appreciate the thoughtfulness. I appreciate the collaboration and the opportunity to participate. I am uniquely interested in, obviously, Ballpark and Walton Street Corridor pieces within this. And I appreciate the understanding of cross transit coming to and through and the impacts within this plan, which many other Denver area plans did not include those dialogues. Can you share your description of trunk transit on page 91 as it pertains to Walton Street? Explain what that means, because I don't think I've heard that term before.
Sure. So the idea there is, you know, Walton Street obviously bisects downtown, but extends into Five Points. It's an important connection historically from downtown to Five Points. Today it's a one-way vehicular motion out with the light rail within the right-of-way. And we want to be able to explore a reimagined transit service along Walton and thinking through how that can better serve the community as well as the businesses along Walton and how that then pulls, Five Points, in downtown closer together. And so there's a, Dottie already has a study that's going to be working with RTD to advance that evaluation, not only to rethink Walton, but also how we actually make the connection up Downing to 38th and Blake and complete the fast tracks a plan for the central corridor. And so the thought there is that, light rail's been there since 1994. If you would build light rail there today, they probably would do it differently. It's limited in its capacity and frequency because of the single tracking. And that would only continue if you brought the light rail all the way to 38th and Blake. So you're limited to 15-minute headways. At the same time, RTD has lots of bus lines actually running parallel to Walton, the 43 and the 38 in particular, that have better ridership than the light rail does today by a large margin. And so we want to examine if we would potentially remove the light rail from Walton, which is a big if, but we, again, just want to evaluate that and think through putting multiple bus lines that are connecting the other parts of East Denver through your district, yep. The 38 to 43, as well as a connection to 38th and Blake, so at least three lines, you could create 5-minute headways. So you have high-frequency bus and invest in the stops along Walton and the public realm that you could actually create a green street, a transit street that is better serving that neighborhood and those businesses. With space for sidewalk cafes, et cetera, while better connecting downtown to that area, might be worth that big leap. And so we want to evaluate that. By putting three lines, bus lines on there, that's what you might consider a trunk line, kind of like how South Broadway would be a trunk line to the south of Denver, Colfax, east and west. That would be a transit trunk line to East Denver.
Well, David, thank you so much. And I saw using that trunk line piece. And I'll say to folks in my final comment, on November 5th, we're having that first meeting. My office is facilitating a discussion with Dottie and RTD on the future of Walton and the beginning step of the mobility study that you just described. And we encourage folks to come to our meeting on November 5th from 5:30 to 7 p.m. Glen Arm Rec Center. For more information, go to district9@denvergov.org. And so thank you all for your good work, and thank you for being responsive to the neighbors in District 9 and adding that piece as well as Ballpark into this plan. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And I need to, before I go to them for questions, invite and welcome Council President Sandoval and Pro Tem Romero Campbell to the meeting. President Sandoval, you're next.
Thank you. Just wanted to say thank you. Thank you for this plan. I hope it gets the outcomes that I've talked about this in it's no secret at this committee that I love land use. And so when I was studying, when I was talking about this plan a long time ago, it was pre-COVID. It was like right during COVID. My office is on 1810 Platt Street. Mm-hmm. And I had never heard this term of light industrial use before. And someone explained our central business district is light industrial use. And I was like, what does that mean in regard to the built environment? And the person I was talking to said what it means is people go into downtown to work and then leave. And so there's all these different uses, but it's not a neighborhood. And I was like, oh, I never thought of downtown as that, of having people go in there, go to work, and then leave and come out. And so hopefully this plan will get us to the neighborhood aspects that we need, mm-hmm. and all of the things that all of us want to do to be able to bring back downtown. The one thing I'll just add is when I was having my briefing, the plan kind of encompasses part of my council district, like down towards the South Platte River. And right the week prior to my briefing, or maybe the same week, I don't know, time is weird when you're elected, we heard from the River Sisters about the South Platte River, and we had just heard at this committee about the turquoise necklace and this idea of personhood for the South Platte River and honoring how important it has been, and the honoring, like, really the confluence is the first place of people meeting. It wasn't miners who found Denver. It was actually people's land before. So with that, I started asking David and the other people from the Downtown Denver Partnership what language was in this plan to preserve help facilitate the South Platte River. And I went to language that was added in with Councilman Torres with the West Area Plan. Mm-hmm. And then we added it in the near Northwest Area Plan. And then I asked David to add it to this plan. So I'm hoping, David, it was. I don't know if I can't speak to that. But just so you all know, the language that I asked him to add is, it says, the South Platte River serves as an important ecological and recreational amenity for residents. Prioritizing the health of the river and increasing public access to and along the river corridor are critical in transforming the South Platte River into a premier urban corridor where people and nature thrive in harmony. And that phrase is in the West Area Plan. It's in the near Northwest Area Plan, which encompasses the Platte River, like down by Platte Street. And I hope it made it into this plan, because I feel like it's really important to have a through line through all of our planning documents instead of recreating new language every single time. And so I'm just bringing that up because this is the South Platte River Committee. And I think it was last week that we had the River Sisters here talking about the importance of the South Platte River and honoring it. And I gave them an example. One example I have is I have brain fog. The aquarium, mm-hmm. in my council district. what's its name? I have the aquarium in my council district, and at one point they wanted to put a 5-story building parking lot right next to the aquarium. It would have faced the South Platte River. Mm. We don't want uses like a 5-story parking garage on the Platte River. We want uses that are really important. And so I just gave that as an example. I had to work with the Greenway Foundation and other entities along that area to fight back against the aquarium. And so I think these plans are so important for our built environment. They can influence really positive things, and they can also influence the creation of really negative things, because they actually can influence zone districts. And so just and that's where my brain immediately goes with the plan, because as we all know, when we come to city council, when we put our land use commissioner hats, doesn't meet our adopted plans. It's one of the first questions we ask. So it has to, I'm always gonna go back into that plan, because we vote on words, and words didn't develop into policy, which develop into zone districts, which develop into the built environment. And that's how my mind delineates these processes. So just want to say thank you. I saw you nodded, David. And
yeah, that language is in the plan in the Central Platte Valley focus area. I believe that's page 82.
Great. So thank you for all of that. And the next step, I'll just say, is putting these plans into action. So I'll take off my land use commissioner hat and put on my DDA person hat, who I sit on the Downtown Development Authority, 3DA. And my focus has been, can this plan help us actualize some of that money, that tool that we have with the downtown development area, and make it work so that we have that tool, because that tool was so successful with Denver Union Station. We paid it off 15 years early, which now is helping us in a real time of a budget crisis and really helping spur redevelopment, as you all have seen as the DDA projects have come on. And these plans need to, there has to be a through line between what we all approved with the DDA amended plan of recommendations and this plan in order for all of this to holistically work. So it's like you're building a big puzzle piece and you're filling in the puzzle as we go. So this is just one other tool to help us actualize some of the work that we're doing on the DDA, which anything that was over $500,000 comes to us as a body as well. So it's all interconnected. So thank you for all that work, and thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much. I just want to do a time check. We're at 45 minutes now for this item, so let's go maybe up to another five. We have a couple more folks in the queue before we transition to our next item, and we've got Councilman Hines.
Thank you, Committee Chair. Oh boy, this is all my district. I have to compress it to 30 seconds.
I hope this isn't your first consultation.
No. So it's the second, I think. So it's certainly been in the, I have comments, not questions, and I'm really in support of the plan. And I'd just say the downtown area plan talks about moving from a central business district to a central neighborhood district, as Council President mentioned. The two downtown neighborhoods are the least populated of the District 10 neighborhoods, and this is the best way for us to get activation 24/7, is to promote this area to more residents, including families, to Councilmember Legeris's point. And for what it's worth, I think the plan does talk about that, about the central neighborhood district means that we don't want workers to just come and leave. We want people to feel like they can age in place. From a practical standpoint, I would say that when we passed the Golden Triangle realignment, we created more mandatory ground floor activation. And so developers ask me, well, what should we do with this ground floor? First thing I suggest every time is childcare, because I keep seeing developers buy up buildings that have childcare centers, shut it down because they don't want, they're not in the business of childcare, they're in the business of redevelopment. But development takes years to go through the planning process, and so we're losing childcare centers, and we're not gaining them back. So, Councilmember Flynn, about the SPEAR realignment, the goal of this plan is to focus on downtown, but to also make sure that that downtown can breathe, as in, interacting with the other neighborhoods around downtown, and that means that we have to have better connectivity between the two downtown neighborhoods and surrounding ones. Of course, we have to do a financial and priority analysis. So maybe SPEAR is the right answer to go first. Maybe it's the right answer to go third, and maybe it's the right answer to not do it at all. But I certainly want to have those conversations about connectivity. In that particular conversation, it's talking about the connection of the largest college campus in our state to the largest job center in our state. So how do we leverage, how do we maximize that competitive advantage when students are using the in-state tuition from California to come here to CU Denver? And we want to steal that knowledge and that talent and keep them here for Denver jobs. And so maybe SPEAR is the right answer, maybe it isn't, but we certainly want that connectivity. So I'm glad that we're at least, we have it on the plan to consider. One more point about breathing. We've got Cherry Creek West, $1 billion project. We've got Green and River Mile, multi-billion-dollar project. We've got $1 billion investment in Golden Triangle. What's between all of those is $570 million of public investment, the largest public investment of any center city in any city in the nation. And so I sure hope we have Ball Arena and River Mile residents come downtown to see our playgrounds and to see our play. And that's what I see in the downtown area plan as well, is taking the Cherry Creek West folks downtown for play and taking Golden Triangle folks downtown to play. And so we've got the 16th Street Mall, the spine of our city, and I see in this downtown area plan connecting Civic Center to 16th, connecting the Performing Arts Complex to 16th, connecting Union Station and the two sports stadiums to 16th. And that's part of the plan as well, to make sure that we have connectivity inside the downtown neighborhoods. We allow them to breathe outside the downtown neighborhood. And finally, I want to thank you for the 5280 Trail. We're connecting seven neighborhoods in a circle around the center city, just as 16th is the spine through the center city. So I think I've encapsulated some of the thoughts and questions I've heard from council members and before me, but I think the answer is yes, that this does contemplate all of the things that that keep me awake at night, that want that I help me make the biggest job center in the state vital, revitalized, and vital once again. So thank you, Committee Chair.
Thank you, Pro Tem Romero Campbell.
I can do this in 60 seconds.
There you go.
That's a challenge. go for it.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I represent Southeast Denver. It is not the city center. It is, but people within Southeast Denver have choices. And so through the four light rail stations that run through the district and two that are just on the other side of a boundary line to another county, to two other counties, people have choices in Southeast Denver. And so with this plan, what I'm also seeing is that place for people to go to buy or to, have housing and go with children and also have recreation. Huge. It's a huge deal. When I say we have choices, easily we can go south. And there are a lot of options south right now. And so having a strong downtown and having it revitalized and thinking about it in such a way that is a draw is, I think, super important for Southeast Denver. And so it's why I come to South Platte, because I know I'm not right along it, but right along the South Platte. But there are similarities within. We have the Highline Canal, although it's now no longer used as a waterway, there is a conservation easement on it. And I think that that health and vitalization, or I should say health, around the canal and the Highline Canal, as well as Cherry Creek, is so incredibly important. And I think there's so many similarities that I see with the work that's happening here. So I just wanted to say thank you, and thank you for this committee for moving this forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. I don't get a vote on it moving forward. I'll give it a thumbs.
Just really quickly, David, do you know kind of how this leaves Civic Center in terms of future plan guidance? Like, does it have enough guidance, because it's not technically part of the like the NPI? We did a small area plan. Just wondering where it leaves the neighborhood.
So I'm going to make sure I get this right, but so Civic Center, including Golden Triangle and everything where we're at right now, is within this downtown area plan. And so
it has enough plan guidance that it's fully, like, this is its new plan guidance.
Yeah, correct.
That neighborhood.
So I've had a discussion with the city attorney's office, and we'll make sure we get this language right when we get to council on November 17th on what supersedes what compared to the other small area plans.
Yeah.
But so, like, from a land use perspective, I guess maybe I'll just focus on that. This plan does not have a future land use map that changes anything that would have been done in that previous plan. Same thing with say the amendment to the downtown plan. So those elements are not going to be changed by this plan being adopted.
Okay. Let me know if there's anything else around that. And we need to move on. So any other questions, I'll kind of send them your way, or we can follow up separately. But this is an action item, so we'll need a motion to move this forward in a second. Thank you. Second. Okay, I thought hesitated. Flynn, is that?
I don't know if it's okay.
Okay, I'll be the most seconded.
Flip a coin.
All right. Everyone good with this moving forward? Great. Thank you so much. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Thank you, Courtney. We'd love to invite up other members from CPD as well as Department of Finance. Maybe DDPHE. Not sure who everyone is joining us.
Thank you for sending me back.
Yeah, of course.
And if you wouldn't mind starting with introductions, and then you can go ahead and get started.
Great. Good afternoon. Thank you for having us here today. So my name is Stephen Wilson with Community Planning and Development, and I'll hand it over to Andrew.
My name is Andrew Johnston. I'm here with the Department of Housing Stability.
And Greg Hammer, Department of Finance.
Great. Great. So thank you again. Thank you for having us. So we're here today to follow up on actions taken by City Council last year in October to rezone the Ball Arena property and approve the associated development agreement. And we're here today to talk about an update to that development agreement along with three other portions that are related to that. So we'll be presenting the second amendment to the Ball Arena development agreement, escrow management agreements for affordable housing linkage fees for both of those projects, Ball Arena and River Mile, and a companion special revenue fund for the escrow accounts. So first one we'll go over is the Ball Arena development agreement. As you may recall, in the development agreement that outlines Kroenke Sports and Entertainment's responsibility to build a central park in the Ball Arena project, the goal of that is to become a city-owned and dedicated park space. And so in order for the city to accept that park space, the agreement specifically outlines the environmental requirements and what happens if those cannot be met, and provides forms of easement for public access for clean corridors. So this is what the addition is, or the amendment is. It also gives a developer the option to control of the street if it cannot meet the city standards, and just provide public access to allow the public to use the street like a typical city street. This is similar language to other development agreements that we've done in the city, including Broadway Station, Fox Park, and River Mile. With that, I'll hand it over to Andrew to cover the next item.
Yeah, and also we do, so here with the Department of Housing Stability, and kind of just talking about how the other two pieces of, other three pieces of legislation as are impacting as well with this second amendment to the development agreement. We are also amending the development agreement exhibit, which is the high impact compliance plan for Ball Arena. And what we're doing is we're trying to bring that into alignment with the community benefits agreement that's in place. And in there is one term that we discovered later on that was not in alignment. And so we're doing that. And what it is to, we're adding a term in there of just limiting 300 units in two of the all affordable towers when they get built, so that we also are limiting the size of the affordable units at the site, and but then also making sure that there's integration of affordable units through the balance of the site. So try not to avoid the concentration. And so with that, we are the rest of the legislative pieces that we're bringing forward today are all about administrative implementation of the River Mile development agreement and the Ball Arena development agreement. And so let's, I think you're too far. Yeah, that way. All right. So the both the second the second and third pieces of legislation here are reflecting how to basically administer the development agreements. And what we, in both the River Mile and the Ball Arena development agreements, call for a provision where amounts of the linkage fee should be set aside in a certain escrow account. And that escrow account can then be accessed to develop affordable housing on each of those sites. And so in here at the Ball Arena, we do have a provision where 20% of the linkage fees collected would be put into an escrow account. On the River Mile agreement, it talks about the first 65 million or 65,000. 65 million or 6.5 million. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Come on, Andrew. Like, that's a big difference.
million square feet of non-residential development would have its linkage fee put into the escrow account. So the agreements will call out like the compliance arrangements, as well as like how do they make draw requests. And the city approved those subsequent draw requests. Next slide would be just to talk about the escrow agreements or the special revenue fund. We call it an SRF. And for this, we are creating a special revenue fund just to manage these escrow accounts that will be held at Calo Trust. And those agreements basically special revenue fund will basically track and allow us to account for the money being received by the city through CPD, subsequently deposited into our city accounts, and then accounted for, and then deposited offsite in Calo Trust. And so those are the three additional administrative pieces that we are bringing forward today. So with that, I think we have any questions.
Oh, great. Thank you, guys. Councilman Flynn, you're up first.
Thank you. Just real quickly then, on the development agreement amendment, amending the Affordable Housing Compliance Plan to cap the number, and I understand that because we discussed this at the rezoning and everything else. What did the development agreement allow as far as affordable units prior to this amendment? What's the current status?
So there is an appendix in there, but basically the total amount of affordability is 18% of all the residential development out there is to be dedicated as affordable housing. And there's various component and breakdowns and sub requirements for like 2 and 3 bedrooms and things right. of that nature. Does that answer your question?
I'm flipping through the appendix now and...
Yeah, try pages 12, 13 maybe. Because we're estimating about 1,000 or so affordable units on the whole Ball Arena site. Is that
Andrew Lyam might have the answer as well.
Well, previously we just didn't have any cap for those affordable housing structures, okay. And those are for the units. Those are for the structures that are most likely going to be financed with low-income housing tax credits. They're going to have the more deeply affordable units. So the high-impact development compliance plan includes a commitment to 30% AMI units, so those more deeply affordable units. And they're going to be in two allowable structures that are for those more deeply affordable. So we didn't have a size limit built into it.
So we're going from no limit.
We're going from no limit to a cap of 300 units.
Okay, and we had discussed that a long time ago. So
we did.
No other questions about it.
Thank you so much. One of the things that I just wanted to understand, can somebody walk me through what we might see in terms of dollars flowing into the escrow and utilization of the escrow? Like, what do we think that might look like, knowing phase one might be underway right now on the Ball Arena site? Phases two and three might be a lot later, but I don't know when escrow dollars continue to flow in. It's probably through the development of other buildings in those other phases, so they don't really flow in. I just want to make sure that we're not just holding on to a lot of money in the escrow account because we're waiting for the other developments to come through. I don't know.
Sure.
If I'm saying that right.
I think I'm following what you're saying. And the concept of like collecting those linkage fees, right, is like we only collect a linkage fee whenever it's a non-residential development. And so there, if you look at the whole site of Ball Arena, there's some commercial uses and there's residential uses. And when we've talked with the developer team and what they're, you know, projecting and estimating, and who knows what'll really happen years from now, right? But phase one is going to be heavily residential, so there probably won't be a whole lot of collections of linkage fees in those first few phases.
But there will be affordable housing built.
There is going to be affordable housing built in as part of that.
I think you said residential.
Sorry, Leah, can you come to the mic? Yeah, that's right.
You also might want to do this.
So phase one's primarily not residential. I think you just said residential. So it'll be primarily more of the linkage fee collection, less of the units. So it's more of the entertainment district, smaller bedroom sizes. And so the linkage fee will be captured and then reinvested into the units. And maybe KSC wants to speak to planning the phasing.
Sure.
Yes, Matt Mahoney with Cronkin Sports and Entertainment. Bless you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Within our first phase and our first buildings in phase one, we're projecting roughly 300 units of multifamily residential, which will have the 18% affordable requirement blended throughout. We're looking at a hotel that would pay linkage fee into it. We're looking at a performance venue as a potential that would also pay linkage fee into the fund. So linkage fee, the actual reserve fund would start collecting linkage fee in the first phase.
Matt, do you have any anticipation of when that escrow, whatever's held there, would actually then be used in the next phases? Like how much time would be taking place? I think one of the concerns is, will we be waiting a long time, right? And all of those dollars just kind of sitting there.
Right. I mean, I believe in our development agreement that we're not able to utilize linkage fee dollars until the second phase, phases two and three downfield. So we're not tapping into the fund in the first phase of buildings.
Okay. And the city feels okay with just waiting on that, not really having a timeline on it. I know we can use linkage fee dollars in affordable housing all over the place, but we're saying we're just going to keep holding it.
That is true.
Is there a timeline, a deadline?
There's a deadline for the overall agreement, but there is not a deadline where the funds need in the escrow account need to be deployed before then. Mm-hmm. So as a on the Ball Arena in specific, just as a clarification, it is 20% or 25% goes to the escrow account. The remainder goes to the affordable housing fund.
Correct.
And so just to be clear, the money that does go in there, we still are getting, if money is deposited in the escrow, we're already getting other affordable housing funds to use in the meantime.
Say worst case scenario, phases two and three don't get built. How long are we waiting before that escrow account hits that deadline?
Yeah, if it gets to June 30th of 2050, I'm hoping I won't be here at that point.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. That would be a long time.
Nice.
that would be the termination of the escrow agreement.
Got it.
And at that point, any funds that would be left over in the escrow account would then revert back to the Affordable Housing Fund for any sources or uses that it can be used for.
Okay. And so past phase one, what does it look, what are you guys planning?
And just to tie back to the 2050 day, that's the same day. That's why it's
the 50 day was chosen, because that's the length of our vesting on property, right?
Okay.
So those are tied together. So phase one, I mean, we're projecting as of now a build out around all of Ball Arena by 2032.
Okay. And I will remind folks,
things change, right? But that's the projection.
Totally. I already typed in Matt. You're in my notes. Yeah. one of the other things that we approved was a property agreement with Parks and Recreation to begin some of the South Platte river work that I think is also part of the plan in terms of the River Mile section. So we had already seen that come through here, which I know has to happen before you start construction on those other properties.
Right. That's a site use agreement.
Yeah.
Parks. That's right.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, Matt. Any other questions? Yes, Councilman Hines.
Thank you, Committee Chair. since you're there, you said all of Ball Arena by 2032. Are you saying all three phases?
Just the entertainment district, just okay. The district around Ball.
Okay, so not even, so is that phase one? Or are you saying not even phase one?
There are probably, you know, two or three phases within phase one, right? Just to make it more complicated for you. But when we use the word, you know, it's really, phase one is in its entirety is the entertainment district. Phase 1A is the first buildings that we've submitted as a concept plan to the city, which is the multifamily, the performance venue, the hotel, and the bridge at Spear.
And that's 2032.
No, that one is, that starts earlier, that we're projecting a construction start next year and a completion in 2029.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, thank you. And you don't have any, you're not working on phase two or phase three at all?
Right. Not now. At the moment, no.
Okay. And then one question for host is part of the hold of the linkage fee until phase two, is that to make sure that we, encourage the developer to develop? Is that part of the locking of the linkage fee until phase two?
I think what we were looking for is we have some permanent supportive housing that's contemplated in two all affordable towers, and it's going to be very hard and very complicated and involves, you know, low income housing tax credits and whatnot, but it is loosely understood and hopeful that it probably the linkage fees will be used to support two towers that include some deeply affordable, including maybe some permanent supportive housing that's required. And so I, in my guesstimates, and I think we want to save it for those kinds of projects, which are in phases two and three or in the other, not the entertainment district.
And if I recall correctly, one of the fully affordable towers is in phase two and one of them is in phase three.
That's correct.
Okay. So, So not only is it to help fund that fully affordable tower, I take it as a bit of an incentive to moving forward with the development too. So we're spending all this time planning and creating instruments. Sure would be great to get to use those instruments at some point. So thank you. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much. Any other questions? We can consider these in a block if I have a motion and a second. Thank you. Second by Councilman Watson. Any issues moving it to the floor? Thank you. We have no items on consent. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
My son's coming. I'm excited. I don't have him this week.
All right.
Is this one of the
ones? I haven't even got out there to look.